There is another way to learn. Where questions open doorways, where wonder leads us home, where every heart remembers the wisdom it has known. All learning reimagined, where passion meets possibility. With Teresa Songbird, come explore what learning can be. For parents, teachers, seekers, and dreamers, learning comes alive.
G'day, g'day, and welcome to All Learning Reimagined. I'm your host, Teresa, bringing you a little ray of sunshine, as together we're reimagining the future of education, one inspired story at a time. Welcome back, everybody. And thank you to my regular listeners who've been giving a shout out and saying that you're really enjoying the Embodied Intelligence series. I'm loving it too. And today we're actually up to episode 4 out of 9. So episode 1, we looked at, are we more than a physical body? Episode 2, we looked at, how does safety influence learning, which is so important today. Last week, we looked at how is the body connected, and we introduced a deeper comprehension of fascia in the body and its role. And today, we're going to look at, if the body is connected, then what experiences might the body be carrying? And this is such a valuable message for all parents and educators and learners out there to be able to comprehend what's going on with our bodies and the fact that our body holds memory. And so I really invite you to ponder on the question, can experiences leave imprints beyond our conscious memory? So can the body hold and store memory as well? So I wanted to, first of all, share an experience, a childhood experience that I had many years ago, and I really cannot remember how old I was. I think I might have been about 5 or 6 years old, and my family were going on a camping trip, and we were going to a part of Australia on the coast that you cannot get to by road. You could only get there by boat. And we were going to go camping with lots of different families. And I do remember that for me to get onto this boat, in my memory, it looked like a trawler in my head, but I don't know what type of boat it actually was. It was just too long ago. But I do remember it was rough weather. It was stormy weather. And I had to walk across a tiny little plank to get onto the boat. So from the marina over this plank and onto the boat. And it wasn't large enough, the plank, for anyone to go 2 by 2. It had to be just one person individually. And I remember being terrified and refusing, typical small child, point blank refusing to do it. And I carried on like an absolute pork chop, quite frankly. I still remember the fear though. Like I can still feel that fear and the movement beneath my feet when the plank was moving and rocking as I was stepping. That whole uncertainty and the feeling that I might fall down the edge of the boat and into the water. I didn't want to be crushed between the boat and the marina with the water way back then. And here I am many, many, many decades later, and I can still notice a physical response every single time that I get on board a boat. I mean, my mind knows that I'm safe today, definitely, and yet there's something in my body that remembers that childhood experience. And so I would love to ask you, have you experienced something similar? Has there ever been anything that's happened in your life and it triggers memories for you years later? I mean, it's almost like the memory is not stored as information. It's almost like it's stored as an experience throughout the body. And I'm really curious to know how this lends into the lens of learning for any learner of any age, because we're all learning, and even considering people who have Alzheimer's. So we know that there's so much around Alzheimer's that we're still discovering, but I wonder how the body and the memory of the body fits in with situations like that as well. It's a really fascinating topic, and one that I'm quite interested and curious to explore, because I've written down a couple of notes here to try and keep myself on track because I get so excited about this topic. I go off onto all different tangents. My notes that I wrote was, have I ever felt, or have you ever felt, your stomach tighten before you hear difficult news? It's almost like your body can pick up or sense that difficult news is coming. Or your shoulders feeling tense during conflict. I know that I carry a lot of tension in my shoulders at certain times, and I have to go and get massages and do lots of stretches and try and push and work that energy and that tension out from my shoulder area. And then, of course, your jaw clenching under stress. Some people might grind their teeth, but that jaw clenching under stress. Or sometimes you might have a conversation with someone, and then your whole chest area just feels lighter because you've managed to share and connect with someone. It doesn't all have to be from a negative experience perspective. It can go either way. And what I have come to realize is that the body appears to respond to experience. So when this is happening for me right now, what I'm doing is I'm sitting back and sort of talking to myself. I'm talking to my own body and going, what am I remembering? What is it remembering? What's my body remembering? And I guess the reality is that we experience body memory every single day. And my boat experience is only one very small example where I consciously know today when I'm going on boats that I'm safe. And I understand boats and I understand the weather, and yet my body still remembers that original experience, the narrow plank, the storm, the uncertainty, the feeling. My nervous system really learned something important that day, and our nervous system works for us. It's on our side. It's trying to protect us. That's its job. And so I know today that when it's whispering to me, pay attention, it's not because the nervous system is blocking me, it's actually because that's the experience that my body learned all of those years ago. And this gives me then a really big question, like it leads me to the big question that for generations we have, particularly in the learning space, associated memory primarily with the brain. And yet, modern research is increasingly exploring the relationship between memory and emotion, physiology, definitely, and the nervous system. Perhaps, memories more than facts and information. Perhaps the experiences that we have shape the patterns throughout our entire system of the body. And that's what I would invite you to explore or ponder on, for our topic today, because from what I can gather, and this is just my opinion, from the seat that I'm sitting at today, I can see that we seem to currently believe today, and this is very general, that many people think of memory as like recalling information, remembering names, retaining facts, storing experiences, all in the brain. And certainly, I would agree that yes, those forms of memory exist. But I do feel that there's other forms of remembering, and the body is learning it too. So, a child learns to ride a bike and you remember it years later. You think about a dancer or a gymnast, years later, their muscles have that muscle memory. A musician learns an instrument, the memory of it is held in their body. They don't forget that. And an athlete can also develop that muscle memory because the body is remembering the patterns. So then I'm wondering, well, could emotional experiences also create the patterns as well? Because my boat experience as a child was certainly very emotional. It wasn't just physical, it wasn't my nervous system, it was also that emotional event which is lingering in my body. And I don't give it a thought whatsoever until I'm put into the same situation today. If it's terrible weather and I'm about to get on a boat, it just takes me straight back there to make me stop and pay attention. And so my comprehension of this, my understanding of this, is that my body is learning through that experience. And you think about a small child, and if they touch a hot stove, You only have to do it once. The body learns not to touch the hot stove because you learn it. There's no conscious effort required, and that's because that lesson becomes embodied. And I really love this word, embodied, because, and it's pretty much why I've called this the Embodied Intelligence series, because it is getting out of our head space, which is still important. It's part of the picture, but I don't feel like it's the whole picture. Because much of our life learns this way through embodiment. Experiences teach, our relationships teach, our successes and our losses and our conflicts and our belonging. It all teaches us something. And this is why I wanted to share this on All Learning Reimagined, because the body is constantly adapting. And I really feel that as learners, as educators, as mentors, as parents, this is something to consider when we are put in a situation of a learning environment. Definitely, definitely. So, ancient wisdom, as anyone who listens to me regularly knows, that I really love to go back to have a look at comprehending the old way of doing things and the ancient wisdom. And when it meets modern science, I mean, many traditional cultures recognized experiences leave an imprint. There's stories, there's rituals, ceremonies, movement, dance, breath, definitely connections to nature, one of my favorite things. These were often used to help communities process experiences rather than just to think about them. And today's modern fields, there's trauma research, there's somatic practices, there's nervous system science. I don't even know what to call it. I don't even have the official words for it. I really don't even care what the official words for it. I just know that we are starting to explore similar questions today about how our experiences shape the body and how does the body participate in our healing and in our growth. These are not small questions, because there's definitely a distinction, because many researchers and practitioners, I feel, are exploring how experiences may influence the patterns of tension or protection or physiology and the nervous system responses throughout the body. Yay, I say, like, wow, let's have this conversation. I think this is a really important one. And that's because it matters for learning. Because imagine if a learner failed publicly once or was laughed at while they were reading aloud, as if that's never happened in a classroom, or they were told they were bad at maths, or they experienced repeated criticism years later. They may approach learning from that same protective stance that their body, their fascia, their nervous system would have done back then in that original experience to protect themselves. And even years later, it's not that they're, lacking the intelligence to know what's going on, but those previous experiences shaped expectations in them. The body remembers the patterns, and the nervous system remembers the patterns. So learning, therefore, in my opinion, becomes more than just acquiring information. It's not just consuming information. It becomes creating new experiences and possibilities and evidence and new stories. Because we have to embody the learning. And so I'd really love to use a garden path analogy here. This is what I use to try and explain this, and hopefully this will help put things in perspective. So imagine walking across a field, and one path is traveled every day. I'm thinking about, cows in a paddock that go backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards, and then they actually have that path that is built in a paddock or built on that path every day. And yet another path is rarely used. And over time, that frequently traveled path becomes much easier to follow. And we know through neuroscience, this is what's happening in our brain when we're creating neural pathways. The repetition is creating that pathway. That practice, saying that practice makes perfect, and that repetition, this is what's actually happening. So the same thing does occur within our thoughts and our emotions, and guess what? Also our behaviors. The patterns strengthen through the repetition. And the good news is that new paths can always be created. So when it comes to learning, it's really important to think about this as the big picture. And for me, as an educator, when I'm in this space, I don't just think about movement. It's not just movement. And it's not just the mental state or even the conversations. Although I do love to have all of those things, I love to consider all of the multiple intelligences and different ways the learner might experience things. But I also love to consider things like smell. Freshly cut grass, the smell of sunscreen, someone's cooking, a particular perfume. Sometimes that smell can trigger you somewhere else. So I'm very, very aware of the smells that are going on in this in the learning spaces and in the learning environments that I am in. Taste is another one. A childhood medicine. I can taste something today and it'll take me straight back to childhood medicine, and it's definitely nothing Mary Poppins would have given me, that's for sure. A favorite dessert or a cultural dish, my body is remembering before my mind even catches up based from taste or smell. So there are definitely senses within our body that I don't want to leave out because it's part of it. Sound, we know, singing, a bell, a familiar voice, all of the entire memories can return when they hear something. That frequency and the harmonics is an absolute gift when it comes to learning. And of course, movement. We know about movement. I really feel that movement is fairly well embedded in le our learning environments already. But as I mentioned before, the body remembers patterns, whether you're a dancer, a fisher, you're swimming, you're playing an instrument, you're typing on a keyboard, all that movement can become muscle memory. But the one that I can see, particularly in the last probably 10 years from where I'm standing, is the emotional experiences is also starting to come to the forefront. Thank goodness, because it's a huge part of learning and embodying the learning. When you walk into the classroom or you stand in front of a crowd and you're speaking aloud or you're reading aloud, and for adults in the room, it might be when you have to speak up at a meeting, your body will remember the experiences that you've had with public speaking before. And so when a child says something like, I'm bad at maths, when you explore that comment deeper, there's usually a story there, that experience or that memory or that movement. And so it's a matter of going, well, what can we do about this? How can we breathe into presence, into now, and center ourselves so that we can release what was in the past and create a new experience and retrain our nervous system and our fascia and our bodies, to feel differently about whatever that experience happens to be. And it's very possible to do. There's many different modalities out there that do help this, but from what I can gather, the body is not remembering information, it's remembering life. I'm going to say that again. The body remembers life. And isn't that what it's all about? If we're learning something, isn't it meant to be for life? Otherwise, what's the freaking point? Honestly, there's just so much that's going on out there and so much learning happening in schools today that's just has nothing to do with life, or it doesn't make any connection to that child or that learner's life. And so the body and what it might be sensing might something be something that they can't quite understand at that time. But it will certainly hold within them and be there with them as they move through life. So a quick little micro practice for anyone that's interested, which is a body memory awareness. I guess it's a strategy that you could use, a small little micro practice. So you can think about meaningful memory. Doesn't have to be a most difficult memory. It doesn't have to be a traumatic memory whatsoever. Just thinking of a memory, a meaningful memory that you might have. And then you sit with your body, just center yourself and take away all distractions, put away devices, shut the door, try and be alone when you're doing this. And then notice when you're thinking about that memory, what's happening in your body. Does your posture change? Sometimes your breathing might change. Do you notice warmth in your body or tension or ease? Or do you notice curiosity? And it's not something you don't have to fix it. You don't have to do anything. You're simply observing. When you're thinking about that memory, what is your body telling you? How is it communicating to you? I like to personally put my hand on my heart, on my chest, and take a slow breath when I'm doing this. And then I'm simply observing. And sometimes I like to write it down, journal, or write down what comes up. And then I often ask myself, what do I choose to do about this? Is this something I'm comfortable with? Is this something that I would like to rewire or create a different pattern in my body? And it's not something that I do often, but if there is something that does come up for you, then this is certainly a very valuable micro practice you can do. And you can also do it with young children. You can just ask them. And sometimes they don't have the words, but it doesn't matter. The curiosity is there and their body is listening, their conscious and their subconscious is listening. And there's lots of different reflection questions that can tie in with this. Things like, what memories create a strong physical response? Of course, if you've, I don't know, ever been in a car accident or you've had something tragic happen in your life, then definitely that would be a strong emotional response, but it could also be something like a surprise party. Or seeing someone that you hadn't seen in so long and you had such joy to see those people in your life again. It can be something that's just amazing. And when you think about humanity and the collective consciousness, and when there's a huge a world event which changes everything, that experience, the emotion, the feelings, the senses are actually recorded in your body. Your body will remember. Some of these huge world events, and it's interesting to sit with it and go, what does this mean for me? And no one is the same. No one is the same. No one can tell you how you feel. They can guide you, they can help you, but only you know you. And that's the way it's meant to be. And so questions that I ask myself that might be helpful for people is, how does my body communicate comfort? When I'm feeling good and I feel like I need comfort, how does my body, what does that react in? What does that look like in my body? How does my body communicate stress? And from someone who's experienced burnout from being a workaholic many years ago, but I can tell now, I can feel the tension in my body straight away. And I know now straight away that there are strategies that I can do because I have no intention of ever going down that path again. And so, because I know my body, I can feel it. I'm not distracted. I'm aware of how my body is communicating with me. What patterns do I notice repeating in my life? And then, what new experiences am I ready to create? That's my favorite one because I am now in a stage of my life where I'm not a consumer, I'm not consuming everybody else's information, I'm creating. I'm going, what does this mean for me? What can I create? I choose to be a creative being, not a human doing, which is what I was for many, many years. I just by default, you get up, eat, work, do whatever you were told, whatever you're programmed to say, don't make waves, and then rinse and repeat for a very, very long time. And now it's at the stage where it's like, no, I don't choose that anymore. I'm so much more aware, and there's nothing to change in your life. The only thing that you can change around you is yourself. And what I've discovered is when I'm more in tune with my body and myself, and not only my mindset, my heart set, and what my body is telling me, when I shift within, my entire reality around me is changing. Michael Jackson, Man in the Mirror, he really had it right. If you want to make a change in the world, you've got to start with yourself. And take a really good look at yourself. In order to do that, there needs to be some sort of communication or connection with your body and the memories that your body is currently holding, good, bad, and the ugly, all of it, all of it. And then choose, consciously choose what daily habits, patterns, behaviors, beliefs, what am I going to do now to create what I'm choosing and what my preference is in the future, which is, of course, my highest excitement. I want joy and I want peace and I want balance and harmony and I want abundance and I want it not just for me, I want it for everybody. So when I tie back to my values, it really helps me to navigate what I do with this information. And then, of course, a weekly integration exercise. So throughout the week, And usually this is my Sunday. Sundays are the time when I make sure that I sit and I just check in. How am I going? What do I need to shift? I celebrate small wins or successes within myself, and I really notice the body, how my body's reacting. When I'm asking, is this a response that's connected to the present moment, or am I stuck in the past experience? Am I worried about the future? Because I can only create in the now moment. I don't want to be stuck in the past, and I don't want to be worrying about the future. And I really feel that there's a lot of learners out there today, particularly children who are experiencing so much anxiety. It's because they're worried about the future. They're not necessarily feeling like they are fully in the present. And that's getting out of your head back into your body. And it sounds so simple, and yet it's not, because it's so simple. And we've been sort of taught through media and institutions over the years that it's meant to be complicated and complex, but the simple things are what actually works. And that really links to that whole universal law connection, which is cause and effect. You know, an experience creates ripples, the actions create consequences, learning creates change. It's all cause and effect, which is definitely a universal law connection. And so my question is not, is does cause and effect exist? Of course it exists. It's how long do these effects continue to influence us? Am I being driven by a nervous system today that was wired or influenced by something that happened years ago? Am I ready to let that go? Am I done? Am I ready to reshape my story and make a choice? And how might my awareness help me to create those new possibilities? Because if it's not in your awareness, then you can't do anything about it. And awareness is key, in my opinion, for just about everything. And then, of course, another universal law could be the law of association. You know, this, when a smell becomes associated with a place, or a song becomes associated with a moment, or a feeling becomes associated with an experience, the nervous system creates all of those connections. So that a law of association certainly fits in with this. And oh, it has such massive implications if we take a breath and sit back and go, well, what does this mean for learning? And so for those people who have not listened to my show before, hello, welcome, welcome. I like to rabbit on a little bit. I do like to write an article each week. And this week's article, of course, will be about the topic that we talk about. And the micro practices and activities and suggestions, I always put at the end of the article, which you can find on bbsradio.com/all learning reimagined. All of the articles are there, and the archive shows. For free, of course. Take it, use it, adapt it, adopt it, and share it, make it yours. That's why it's there. So I did want to give a shout out for that. And of course, thank you to beautiful BBS team. They are the most amazing crew. They really, really are. They're just such beautiful, heart-centered people. So I'm going to wrap this all up now in a big fat bow. And that is that the body is not simply carrying us through life. It's not a meat suit. Lots of people say it's just a meat suit, but it's actually learning alongside of us. The fascia interacts with our consciousness. It interacts with our light and with our soul. It's embedded. It's not just floating separately. It adapts, it protects, it remembers. And our body, or perhaps one of the greatest gifts we can offer ourselves, is curiosity about this. How does this work? How does this work for us? Because when you start to become curious, and this is what happens for me, I started noticing my patterns. And then I was able to, with that awareness, choose new ones that I no longer wanted. It's like, oh, this doesn't resonate for me anymore. I'm choosing new ones. I'm not going to live by research, by default. You know, my experience shaped me, but my new experiences can also shape me. So I am choosing my new experiences because I know that the body remembers life. And I think I'm probably going to leave it there, actually. I can't imagine a more beautiful statement that the body remembers life. And it is an aliveness. And that's what we want our learners to be. We want them to be alive and feel that tension and that growth and that amazing aliveness within their body so that they're not like a clone just sort of walking through life and having life happening to them. It's no, it's happening through us. It's magic. I love it. Just love it. All right, guys. So thanks for joining me today on All Learning Reimagined. Until next week, explore, experience, express, go out and live learning.
Carry the wonder with you. Carry the questions home. Every seed of understanding has a life of its own. All learning reimagined, where learning comes alive. With heart, with hope, with courage, we help the future rise. With Teresa Songbird. Until next time, keep exploring, keep creating, keep remembering.